Blog Talk Radio.
Excuse me. Good evening. Welcome to another edition of the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Bilal Masadik Bynum, along with my co-host,
Abdul Aziz Shaheed, and greetings to our audience, and assalamu alaikum to you, Brother Bilal.
Greetings.
How are you today?
Everything's fine, Brother Aziz. Assalamu alaikum to you also. And
thank you.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to another edition of a continuing broadcast of Black Belt Wall Street, New Africa Business Association. And, of course, we are going to continue, as always, talking about our natural disasters and the preparations for natural disasters. But we also are going to continue to talk about business and ownership of business and ownership and having ownership of land, especially your own homes. Getting away from this idea of renting, ownership, because we're finding now, living these economical times, how if you don't own your own land, first of all, and be able to build your homes or be able to buy your homes and be an owner of your home, you could find yourself literally on the, living on the streets, even though they say you have the income of a middle-class income person. Well, a middle-class income person, the cost of living has gone out of your range. So, therefore, if you are caught up now as to where those of you who are maybe used to paying rents of middle-class rents of $2,500 to $3,000, those rents have gone up now, doubling those prices. So as you can see, if you're in the situation of where
that's
I have to
that's all around
rent,
the country, too.
That's all over the country. I was just left down in Birmingham, Alabama, in the same situation for those who are renting. As a matter of fact, you already see the situation because there's a lot of folks that are homeless in that city. And, of course, their colors happen to look like me. African-Americans and many of them I saw happen to be females, homeless. And you know, you can always recognize a homeless person. There's something you can't disguise, especially if you've been homeless around a few days or more. So, again, you're right, Brother Aziz. It doesn't escape you, even though you may say, I'm going to go to the South. The situation is for his renting. And of course, it's no more than Brother Aziz, greed, taking the advantage of a economical situation, making sure you the cost is always more than what you can normally pay, and So I can't express how important I think it is that you own. Become
Absolutely.
An owner, especially a homeowner. But the business owners are just as important. And again, brothers and sisters, you see, if we was especially in real estate, that's I don't know why we're not studying. And I say studies because there's so much that you need to know about real estate, the zonings, the codings, taxations. I mean, there's just so much you need to know about real estate, and we should know these things so we can start building our own communities. And many of the communities we already own, we already live in. But we don't know that much mm-hmm. about the real estate that we even own. Your estate, many of you have inherited lands that you haven't looked into simply because you live in the modern cities, and the estate that you inherited, it's like they said, down south, and you know nothing at all about the estate planning and the estate planning laws, because not only down in the south, but even here where you presently live. So when it comes to real estate and being have title companies, and we should own these companies in our own communities. We shouldn't be relying on someone else to take care of our title needs and pay the amount of monies that we have to pay. And not only that, that's the reason why you're paying so much for your home, for homes, is because we're not in the business and we don't own our own lands. We don't own our own developments, so we have to pay whatever someone tells us we have to pay, and that should change. So real estate is one of the big markets that African Americans should see themselves in. So again, network marketing, business identification. That's why we need to know who is who in business. Whether you're a large corporation, African-American large corporation, or whether you're a small business person. Knowing who is who, because again, the more we network and do business with each other and keep our monies flowing into our own communities without having to, where it would have to go on the outside for, where we have to spend on the outside for any of our business needs, our business supplies. All of that, by networking, you'll find that there is an African American that you can do business that have these supplies or services that you might need. But we don't know each other, so we don't know how to really look that up. And that's what the Business Association, Black Belt Wall Street, New Africa Business Association, that's what we inspire, is that we network and get to know each other. And when I say network with each other, that's what we're doing right now. This is a form of networking. This is the New Africa Business Association, and we want to get to know your business, and having you to come on to your station, or having you to send us our emails, or whatever way we can get to know each other collectively, and then be able to do business with each other. We can decide whether we are going to do business with each other or not, but by not knowing each other, period, it's impossible for us to do business with each other. And being that most of us are consumers, last time I was looking at some of the statistics, it was saying that we're somewhere around 95% nationwide consumers. And so most of us are consumers. So again, being that we are consumers and not in business, it's going to be pretty hard to find the African-American business because there are so many other businesses that are in front of us, and their numbers are much larger than ours. So if I was looking for the average restaurant, the average goods and services, 9 times out of 10, I wouldn't find an African American because there's not that many of them. And having a channel of communications, a marketing channel of communications, as to where we do nothing but network and identify our businesses, and so we can do business with each other. We also look forward to looking into the idea of becoming investors and creating businesses jointly as a group, as a community, as a religious organization, fraternities, or what have you. But again, your communities, your African American communities, when it comes to ownership of businesses, I can't think of a business that is not in demand to be put in our communities. So again, the idea of having your own hotels in your communities. You don't think a hotel would do well in the average African-American community? Look at the amount of money we spend going to other folks' hotels every day. Just think of these hotels. If you had one in many of the communities that we travel to, and knowing that it's an African-American hotel. Same thing with the restaurants. But you name the business, professional dental services, name the business, every business that you can think of. And like I said, real estate, you should see real estate and financial services all over the African-American community, insurance brokers, real estate brokers, security brokers. All of these businesses should be right in our communities where the communities can walk right in and receive whatever goods and services that they're buying when they go to other communities because businesses are not in our communities, and that community, of course, is the African-American communities. So, Brother Aziz, that's my opening comment. So I'll give you a chance to do your opening comment. Then we'll get into, we'll be getting into a program for this evening, and that will be when Sister Aisha come on, we'll be doing the natural disasters. And we can expect her to come on around 7:30, or maybe just a little later. So that's my comments. Any comments, Brother Aziz, that you might have? I am going to be quiet and listen and let you share in.
Oh, thank you, Brother Belial. I was going to say, one of the things that you mentioned about home ownership is it's actually a gateway to being a business owner, because, you know, that's one of the first steps, as you were saying, in owning some land, owning a home, that establishes you in the community. It's not just as a voter, a voting person, a regular voter, but a voter that has land in the community. And that carries a bigger voice. But also, once you know about having home ownership and that gives you a better understanding about how to go towards your business. And we know that at the New African Business Association, Black Belt Wall Street, we know that there are a lot of black businesses that are multi-million-dollar businesses. However, the grassroots people that we reach out to, and Brother Bilal has established this some time ago, that the people that we reach out to, really the multi-million-dollar black businesses, but the black businesses mostly that the grassroots people go to every day, that this should be right in the communities that we live in. And, you know, when we go to our communities and we see the businesses there, 9 times out of 10, and it's not a guessing game at it, we don't see many, if any, of our businesses there other than traditional barbershops and beautician shops. So, you know, we know that grassroots people, a lot of them don't consider or haven't been considering the idea of putting their funds together and coming together and owning a business. If it's nothing but putting your funds together, as Brother Malala and I talked about some years ago about buying an apartment complex, getting enough people to invest in an apartment building and own that, and eventually that will start bringing an income over the maintenance upkeep of it, you know, properly done. And this is a type of generational wealth now that could be passed on. And these are things that grassroots people can come together and do. I think they call them not condominiums or co-ops. You know, and that's ownership from people, and you can put it in there. And co-ops have their own rules that they make of what you can do and can't do with it. But again, that's one way of having some ownership. And if you're in a co-op and all that, and you got a business, well, normally these big buildings and like that, they have businesses inside the buildings too, which could, you know, be another outlet for starting a business. But that's one of the ways that grassroots people can start business, some ownership in the community. But business is something that you actually need, and it goes on to owning whatever franchise businesses, corner stores, laundries, any type of business that we necessarily need. We locksmiths that are right there in the community. We still do see eateries in our community, places where you can go buy some food, mostly fast food carryouts, and not somewhere you sit down and really have a classic dinner. So, you know, what we try to do here at the New African Business Association, Black Belt Wall Street in Washington, D.C., is reach out to our listening audience and try to stimulate some growth or some ideology or some attempt to want to go into business. We're trying to stimulate some excitement about getting with some other people that you may know that may have the same kind of ideas as you, and try and put a business together that you see a need for in the community. In a lot of places in our areas, we see that there are a number of empty buildings, businesses in our community. And when we know whenever empty a business has been there and something new comes in there, well, the people all want to know what it is because it hadn't been there. And we see a lot of that in our community. And even as we've seen in areas where African-American communities in Washington, D.C., as well as in the suburbs of Washington and Maryland and in the number of different places in Maryland. And these are opportunities for us, again, to come in and establish some businesses together. So that is what we're reaching out to our audience to do, is try to encourage you to want to come together with some like-minded people and perhaps put a business in your community that's got a foundation and a building and that, wherein it's somewhere people can come and spend their money on something that they need. And maybe good. They don't. A convenience store for sure is something that is really makes a lot of profit in our communities. So, again, you know, good evening. Welcome.
This is
Sister.
Thank you. This is Sasha Ali. How you doing?
Alhamdulillah, Sister Sasha. Brother Abdul Aziz that was talking, Brother Bilal.
Yeah.
We
just have
Sister Sasha. Yes.
Yeah.
No,
I'm
no,
glad
no,
that
no.
you.
I was trying to see what brother, would you say Bilal?
No, this is Sister Aisha's daughter, and we've invited her on as one of our guests tonight. She's going to also be talking about business and also the African trip that has a business plan put together. So she's going to be
talking.
Yes, the National Muslim Business Council. They're going to several parts of Africa, but I'm gonna let your sister tell us all about that. Did you want to take a letter in there? That you have some other?
I
don't want to stop you from your comments.
Yes, we will definitely welcome the sister. Welcome.
Okay,
sister.
In that case, sister. Like I was saying, brothers and sisters, I think last week we was talking about the black soil. And, of course, we know that black soil is where the highest concentration of slaves were sent. And that ranged all the way from Texas throughout the South and in Virginia. But you have to include Maryland and Delaware because they owned slaves, too. But it was that black soil that made the United States the richest country in the world. And I was saying that if we can take the black soil here in the United States and make America filthy rich, then we can use that black soil anywhere in the world and make any country or any continent super rich. So with that said, the sister is going to be, they have a business plan, and we are going to be getting introduced to Africa. So, sister, we're going to, at this point, turn it over to you, and welcome to our show.
Thank you so much, Brother Bilal. Thank you. I really appreciate it. I am honored to be on the show. I am honored to be a part of the movement that you two are bringing together in the community regarding business entrepreneurship and networking. My name is Sajda Ali. I'm an international education consultant. I've been doing work in education for about 25 years, but for the last 10 to 12 years, I've been working internationally with developing various projects in the diaspora. And when I speak of the diaspora, I'm speaking about Africa and the Caribbean. And I was approached by members of NMBC, Brother David K. Hassan and his wife, to come along on this venture as a consultant to talk about and to help promote and to speak about and put together logistically the trip that is Endeavoring in December. The dates are for December 17th through December 24th or 26th. And the objective of the trip is it's going to be a conference held between it's a 10-day conference held between Sierra Leone and Senegal. So it'll be about 6 days in Sierra Leone, 4 days in Senegal. And the conference is to bring together Black-owned businesses to come over to Africa to start these businesses in the continent. And the purpose of this is because right now Africa is going through a robust state of business ventures. Countries such as China, Russia, and of course the United States are coming into Africa even more so now than before. In this 20th century, 21st century, they're coming into Africa to establish infrastructure, establish businesses, to establish trade, to as they always do, take the resources. What the difference now than before is that the African countries are becoming a lot more careful and a lot more aware about what is going on as far as these foreign partners or these foreign companies coming in trying to partner. And so particular companies on the particular countries led by presidents, different delegates and ambassadors and ministers, they say, you know what, we know that the African-American dollar is strong in America because of the history. We know that they are our descendants. We understand that. And we know that they've established businesses in America successfully. If anybody has a right to come into these countries, our country, to build relations, build networking, build partnerships, build community, we want it to be our African-American cousins and family members and descendants. We want it to be them. And this was said to us actually last week, last Sunday, by one of the representatives on the conference. His name is Bashir Sake, and he is actually the chief advisor to the ambassador of Sierra Leone, who is sponsoring this actually by request of the president of Sierra Leone and the president of Senegal. And he said this in a meeting, that that was a discussion that these African country leaders have come together and said. So with that, that is what sparked the movement for the ambassador of Sierra Leone, Brother Walid Shamsuddin, African-American brother who's traveled abroad internationally extensively and has been appointed by the president of Sierra Leone as the special envoy and ambassador of trade and import to pursue this endeavor. And so his organization, his delegation is partnering with various other companies such as NNBC and others, We Buy Black and such and so forth, in order to put this conference together. And they've been successful in establishing this conference and getting the word out. And when they approached me with it, I couldn't say no. And the reason for that is because I've done business in the diaspora. I've done business internationally in Africa and in the Caribbean, and I understand the necessity that we as African Americans have of taking what we have established here and sharing it with those in Africa and the Caribbean. The reason for it is because what we don't know is that we have advanced as a people. We as African Americans, Black Americans, although our history is dark, although our history is unfortunate, you know, and it is riddled with so much of the nightmare that we experienced. We as a people, as a collective people over these hundreds of years, have been able to do things and achieve things that a lot of people around the world who are part of the diaspora as well have not been able to do. The fact that we've been able to establish large, financially secure and financially advanced communities and societies such as Black Wall Street. The fact that we were able to establish successfully operated HBCUs, and the fact that we were able to establish and run banks and agriculture post-slavery, the fact that we were able to do this has been witnessed by others across the world. And they said, we need that ingenuity. We need that those innovations of the Black Americans, because we understand what they went through, and we are actually an anomaly. We were not expected to survive what we went through in slavery. But not only did we do that, we thrived. And like the brother was saying, we are the reason why this country is wealthy. Taking those resources, taking those ideas, taking those infrastructures that we've created and bringing it to Africa where they need that right now. Sierra Leone is one of the countries that about 10 to 12 years ago, they went through a horrible, horrible war, and they're trying to reestablish themselves. But they need a lot of infrastructure-based support. They need transportation. They need civil engineering. They need cybersecurity. They need import and export trade that's equitable for the country, right? They need education. They need schools built. They need roads built. They need waste management. And all of these things that we see in America as an everyday, everyday resource, this is something that is need for infrastructure base. And we know that we have this knowledge. We know that there are brothers and sisters out there right now who are running businesses like that. You don't have to be a Fortune 500 company in waste management. You don't have to have the employees. Just a business plan that could be translated into working around the geographics in these countries, and that's possible. Because we know that what our history, we've come up with some obstacles and we made the impossible possible. And this is what they're looking for now here in Africa. For those opportunities, for those impossible situations to be made possible for the people. This is also an amazing time in our life right now to reaffirm our connection with the continent. Several countries, such as Ghana, Sierra Leone, Senegal, and some others, are actually opening up residency for African Americans specifically, understanding the past. No one else is more has more of a right to claim than African Americans, and they understand that. They know that. And they know that by opening up residency, that will also bring in the opportunity for communities to be built and for businesses to come as well, incentivizing Black Americans to come back to Africa to establish community infrastructure, civil planning and such. The only request for that one is, like, you know, you take one of those DNA tests, and there's so many out there right now, and you can really Google anyone you want, and then after the results come in, just bring it with you and apply for residency. It's pretty much a guarantee at that point. However, the representatives who are saying this, they are eager and excited to have the opportunities presented to Black Americans for this purpose. So I speak to those who are listening right now, encouraging them to think about that, think about that opportunity, to think about what that would mean. Understand more about the depth of this this endeavor. There are two websites that are significant for you to go to. The first one is AfricanDiasporaConnect.com. AfricanDiasporaConnect.com. It's all one word. And that gives you very, very, very detailed information about the conference, who the speakers are going to be, the package pricing, if you want to go, hotel flights, everything, booking, everything that's involved. The other website is the National M for Muslim, B for Business, C for Conference, nationalmbc.org. That, too, will also give you in-depth information about the trip. This is one and first of its kind, this opportunity. And inshallah, the intention is to continue to mobilize in this direction, because we understand that nothing sustainable happens the first time. We have to continue
in the same direction with the same purpose and same mission. But telling African Americans that the United States is not the only place that they belong is something that needs to be said and needs to be heard by so many. That, yes, you can go home and you can discover what home is because we were not able to. That was taken from us. So now the opportunity is open with not just open arms, but open opportunities, financial opportunities, sustainability, the possibility of legacy development, to pass on something to your children and your grandchildren to say, hey, I'm from Texas, but I also have a home in Ghana, you know, or I'm from Louisiana, but I also have businesses operating in Senegal. This is something that has been denied us so many centuries. But if you look at other cultures, right, and also immigrant cultures today, that come over to the United States, regardless of where they're coming from. They could be coming from South Asia. They could be coming from China. They could be coming from South America. They have residency in their homeland, right? They may even have businesses, small ones or large ones or whatever. They may have businesses in their homeland. They might be working for IBM here in New York or wherever IBM is located or such. But they got maybe some shops or some stores or some small businesses working back home. So this type of lifestyle is not unique on the global level, but it's unique for Black Americans. Now is the opportunity for that not to be a unique situation. Now is the opportunity for Black Americans to get into the international field, the global field. You know, brothers, I was raised with the mentality of a global mindset. Of global opportunities. My mother, Aisha Abdul Ali, who speaks often on your show about sustainability and climate change and such, before she got into that field, my mother was an international broker. She mm-hmm. also used to teach international courses, base courses at the local colleges.
Mm-hmm.
She taught at NCCU. She taught at Duke University. And she was revered in the community as a top-tier consultant for international business. So mm-hmm. my sisters and I would literally study around her feet. We heard the terms. We understood the exchanges. We knew that, you know, whenever you're looking at something in the dollar, it's going to be different in the franc. It's going to be different in the shilling. It's going to be different in other forms of currency. We understood how to read particular charts. So we got an at-home experience from this. And then, of course, all of us have traveled, and we've seen exactly how that plays. But we do understand that our experiences are rare in comparison to a lot of our peers.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually, that's unfortunate because the opportunities are there. Matter of fact, it might be cheaper to fly to Europe than it is to California, depending on the seasonal flights and where, how far you're trying to go and such like that. But just telling a student or telling somebody, hey, you have the choice to travel abroad. You know, you have the option to get a passport and to look beyond your limit. It's not something mm-hmm. that's often told to young Black youth. Now is the time to reiterate that more than ever. In addition to the communication of establish your own, you don't have to just establish your own in Fayetteville, North Carolina. There are opportunities for you to establish your own in Freetown, Sierra Leone. And mm-hmm. what's interesting about Sierra Leone, it was occupied by the British. So it's an English-speaking country. And aside from cultural differences, right, aside from the dynamics of learning a different culture and the way things go, business is business. The exchange mm-hmm. of services for currency works across the world, right? Mm-hmm. So that yeah. is possible. That is possible. And to be honest with you, you can make more money across the world because the dollar is held up to a higher level in these countries. So you mm-hmm. make more of a profit. From that point, you know, I know specifically doing business in Tanzania for $1 is 2,500 of their shillings,
mm-hmm.
right? And so mm-hmm. the cost of living for a single person, for one single educated person in Tanzania, is about $500 a month.
Wow.
$500 a month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so mm-hmm. you can imagine that's just their cost of living. You know, we, mm-hmm. we go through $500 a week here in the United States.
Yeah.
So the opportunities for employment mm-hmm. over there is big because they need jobs. In Sierra Leone, they go through the Sierra Leonean franc, and Sierra Leonean currency, and theirs is even higher. It's like $1 is over $100,000 of their money. You know, so the probability is very, very large. It's very, very large. But what you gain from that on a spiritual level, what you gain from that in a holistic level, is connection, understanding.
Yeah.
You learn more about yourself in that sense. Because we as a people, we have transformed ourselves so many times throughout the century in effort to really find who we are. Because so much was taken from us. So much of our identity and understanding of who we are had been taken from us. In West Africa specifically, they have monuments. They have exhibits. They have places where the slaves were taken. So people can understand, they can feel, they can live, they can breathe, they can visually see, they can touch just how it all took place. And for us as Black Americans to be able to see that and to experience that, that reaches deep down into a part of our soul that we didn't realize was yearning for that connection. I would say that in my experience of traveling back to Africa, I feel like a homing beacon was turned on. And ever since it was turned on, my awareness has been through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an awareness of empowerment.
Yeah.
It's empowerment. Yeah. And that's what we need to continue to do as Black Americans. We do that in so many ways in our culture that we've established here as a people, right? Through the different movements that every generation has been involved in. Started from the slave rebellions until now, until Black Lives Matter. We've always created movements to remind ourselves and each other that we are a powerful people. And it's because of those movements that we've been able to excel further and further and further. This is a new movement, and it's an international one, being able to let go. We've established over 400 years of ourselves here, and as you said before, made this country rich.
Yeah.
So moving into more of a global mindset is the next step in entrepreneurship and business. So I'll repeat again, africadiasporaconnect.com and nationalmbc.org. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak.
Yes.
I'm open for questions.
Brother Aziz, our mics are open. I've opened the mics to everybody. So if you can hear us, we can hear you. We welcome your questions. Our mics are open.
I have a question to ask Brother Aziz. Let's say a regular African American that wanted to go over to any one of those countries that just wanted to go over and see what an opportunity would be for a regular person. Would you have any suggestions in something like that, an idea like that, just, you know, someone that was going over there that was not a professional, per se, in any trade, but just had knowledge of many different things. Do you think it's an opportunity for an individual like that?
I do, most certainly, most certainly. Mm-hmm. This conference is an opportunity because what's going to happen is so many representatives from, it's not just Sierra Leone and and Senegal. There are also representatives coming in from Ghana and Gambia, Liberia, Nigeria. And they're coming in to tell us who the delegation is, about 50 people, 50 to 60 people right now signed up to go. They're coming in to tell us this is what is needed in our country right now. These are the type of services that we require, and we have budget funding set aside for this. You can hear a myriad of these different opportunities, and when you do, it may spark a sense of I can connect with that type of service, or I have skills in that type of service. And then the conversations can go from there. In addition to the entrepreneurs who are the business people who are going over to this trip, there's also other organizations that are who are invited to the trip that actually are brokers or connectors to black-owned businesses, to the businesses in Africa. One of them is called Black Inc. Global Business Network, and that is started by Sister Melissa Muhammad. And she's an international tax accountant. She's an international businesswoman. And her job for so many years with the U.S. government was taking contracts from countries abroad and finding U.S.-based businesses. And she's been doing that for decades. And what she noticed was less than 1% of the businesses that were brought to her or made available to her were black-owned businesses. And she being, you know, within the community, within the Muslim community, she knew there were far more black-owned businesses who needed to have the opportunity to see this. So she started her own business to where she is that bridge between the black-owned business in America and the businesses abroad, not just Africa, but she also works and represents businesses from China and from Europe and South America and such. But she primarily focuses in Africa and the Caribbean. And there's also another business called Essie Capital from a young brother named Crashton Artist II. And once again, he's a broker as well. He connects black-owned businesses with what is to for businesses in Africa. So, yes, brother, I definitely encourage you to either go on this trip or take the opportunity to go on your own accord, and see what's there. Have a conversation with the people. I would suggest, however, that you try to meet with people who have a reputable status because, you know, as we know, there are people out there who are not trying to be legitimate and understand that opportunities are abundant and want to take advantage of newcomers, those who are new to traveling abroad and just don't know the lay of the land, right? So encouraging, so definitely encouraging you to try to make connections to those who have connections to the pre-referenced valid people that could be a successful endeavor of yours. But good question.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I have a continuation of that question, but my question is not so much as an individual. My question is going as large groups. Now that I've heard some of the information that you have shared with me, and of course I know your a mother very well since we have been having our business relationship. She has been very informative, but hearing the general information that you just shared, and I'm glad you did, because we hear so many of the negatives, and I myself have experienced some of the negatives when it comes to doing business in Africa, and of course this. These innuendos go way back. But anyway, after hearing your remarks, I am so glad to hear them, first of all, because I've been saying for years, if there is a way where African Americans can actually own the land, in Africa, and as there is a way where Af- Africans and African Americans after our ownership, now we can become financially vested into the communities in Africa. That's something that I've always been interested in and curious about for a long time. And so your comments was very welcome. Saying that to say, when I first got the flyer from David about the trip to Africa, I only received the flyer, and I didn't receive the general information that you just shared. So I took the flyer, and I put together my own knowledge that I really didn't have. Just, what do you say, you're just talking. But just from those comments, I took them to some of the preachers, church owners, and a couple different states. And they saw the flyer, and just knowing that we're going to Africa and there's businessmen done business before, like you said, it is so rare and so unknown to some of the most influenced African Americans in this country, but it's very unknown when it comes to doing business and having ownerships of business in Africa. So your explanation needs to be, I think, if one could understand your explanation, if that information was shared more, I think you would have a very large crowd going to Africa. And now I know we only have a couple months, but after hearing what I heard tonight, now I can go back and I can tell some of the ministers that was inquisitive, but I didn't have the real answers, that yes, they are talking about citizenship. They are talking about where you can actually be landowners. They are talking about where you can live an independent or dual citizenship in these countries. So again, that type of information, most of our communities don't have. So when you say we're going to Africa, it's almost like we all going to take a vacation and run over to Africa and have a real good time and come on back. Because the real information have not been shared as to where it's valuable business information. That hasn't been shared. And so, sister, I am going to say, in order, I am with you. I support this. At least I support it from everything that I'm hearing you say. And of course, like I said, I can't help but to say you have the intellect of your mother. You can tell that it's all over you.
Yes, indeed.
And so I have to, like, I spoke to your mother about this, but I am going to tell you right now, after hearing you speak tonight, I am supporting you. Now, if you can get others to be able to share the information, and I ain't going up and pointing my finger right back at David. Me and David go way back. But I need the important information about the reasonings for doing the trip, becoming so heavily vested as the communities, as groups, and to bring the values that we would want from going to Africa, and knowing that those values are there, and we can invest into them. As a matter of fact, we can be owners, and like I said, become vested with the Africans, because again, I don't see the point of Africans becoming too invested, African Americans becoming too invested with Africans, but I do see the point of Africans becoming invested with African Americans. I mean,
right.
After all, our consumer spendings alone is more than $1.7 trillion, more money
yep.
than any African nation has ever earned, ever
mm-hmm.
been recorded. So again,
mm-hmm.
I do see the vested interest, if they would have that vested interest in doing business with Americans and become invested with Americans, I think now that, like I said, that black soil and the richness
mm-hmm.
that can be made from the black soil, we've already done that. We just did
mm-hmm.
it for a bunch of white supremacists who didn't share and stole from us. But if we
mm-hmm.
don't have to go through that type of thievery again, if we can deal with honest peoples,
mm-hmm.
then we have shown an example to the Africans that we can do in America the same what we can do in Africa. And that's why I said I will, what you have said, I will support, because that's what the value of going to Africa, the values
yes, sir.
Of going home, the economical values of
mm-hmm.
the day that we can get that information to the African Americans, I think that's the day that you're going to find, yes, another migration. So
yes,
I would
sir.
Invite
yes,
you to continue with us. Because what you're saying is going to have to be repeated. Now that December is coming up, you may want to repeat it as often as you can, but it's not only December, but we're going to have it as to where we have a group and a delegation going to Africa, and I would say at least 3 or 4 times a year. And we're talking
and
about
that has been the conversation. Yes, sir.
And large delegations.
That has been the conversation.
Be
mm-hmm.
So
and that was something that, and that was something. And let me
go right ahead. Make your comments. We got plenty of time.
Oh. Okay. Thank you so much for saying that. I really appreciate you saying that to me.
Your mother. I know your mother is on the phone. Her hour is getting ready to come up here in about 5 minutes.
I'll
be on her
phone. And I'm not going to take your time.
She'll
I'm
going to
leave in 2 minutes so she can have her understanding. But one thing I did, though, brother, and my mother always taught us, is always check your references. Always check your references. And so when it was brought to my attention, I did the research. I checked the reference. Because I'm like you, a lot of people are saying things, you know, they want to endeavor in something ambitious, but one, they may not have never done it before, and so they may think, you know, they can do something that, you know, is more of an undertaking than they understand, and then also, who are the partners that they're partnering with, right? These people, are they valid in their position? Do they come with credibility? And what I've, in my work with the organization, I see that that is definitely the fact. The credibility of the people involved in this in this mission, in this conference. If you go to AfricanDiasporaConnect.com and you read the profiles of the speakers, you would see that there are prolific people in the African-American community. We have an attorney, Musa Danfodio, who's an international business attorney, and we also Mansour Sabri, who is the imam in Atlanta, and also there is Dr. Yahya Abdul Rahman, who's Islamic banking specialist, and he's written several books on Islamic banking, and that's just to name a few who are going to be presenting at the conference.
Yes.
And this is all backed by the governments, the presidents, the ministries, the political heads of state. This is all supported and backed and endorsed and initiated by them, right? So we go into this as a delegation. The members who are attending, they're going in as a business delegation. And then even the packages for the hotels that we're staying at, they also emphasize this. So I would love to come back. I would love to come back and talk more about this I think this is definitely a worthwhile mission to talk about. And I will say that if someone is unable at this moment to join the delegation, but they are able to sponsor a younger person to do it, even if it's a small donation right away, then that is also welcome and requested, because we have to get the younger generation involved. And when I say younger generation, I'm talking about the entrepreneurs between the ages of 25 and 55.
Yes.
Have to get them involved,
yes,
into this,
right,
international,
yeah,
global perspective, because they're going to be the ones starting it and carrying it on, right? So
right.
I don't want to take up too much time from mom coming on.
No, don't worry. Like I said, we invite you to come on if as often as you like. If you could come on, in order to, especially in between December, in order for you to get your numbers up now, you're going to have to be quite aggressive about your comment, letting folks know. So if this is a way of communicating, we are going to offer it to you. And I'm going to also ask you some of the things, like I said, some of the information that you shared tonight, we just don't know. And if you have that information, let's say in words or in some sort of a flyer, any way we can get a lot of your information out, we also would welcome you to send that information to us, and we will get that information out, because we do have connections to about 10 different states that are participating with us, and we're looking on our statistics, our radio statistics. It shows that we're being heard in Great Britain, most of course here in the United States, about 94% of everything we're doing, but a large percentage is in Great Britain, a large percentage is in the Caribbean. We have a pretty good percentage, they're telling us, that's coming out of Africa, and we even have a nice percentage of listeners coming out of Saudi Arabia. We've been out here now for 8 years. So again, I am at a stage now where it's time to be very proactive. We've been talking long enough. If we got to continue to talk, it's time for me to quit, because we didn't talk long enough. I'm a certified financial planner. And most of the folks you mentioned, I know most of them. Brother Aziz and I both know most of them. We've met them. I've been with the Muslims Business Association and the New Africa Business Association ever since the Imam started the association. That was in 1995. And then, of course, we changed our name to New Africa Business Association in 2005. I've been right here ever since. So I've met all, I participate, and we have a strong business connection here in the United States, but we got to bring some value to that business connection, because it's a little, how do you say, it's on hold right now. So, sister, so your information, I would, like I said, we're with you, and that's just a matter of how much of that information you want to bring on board, especially from 7 to 8 p.m. But at this time, I see it's 5 minutes after 8, and I am on your mother's time. Sister Aisha, are you with us?
Yes. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum
salam.
Your daughter just gave us a beautiful presentation. And that it's something that you and I are going to be talking about, stealing the shadows.
Very good. I look forward to us having this conversation about the trip and about the plans that are being put in place for this this economic venture into Africa. So, inshallah, we are continuing to talk about it, Brother Bilal, Brother Aziz, and I got in on the tail end of it, but I did learn something, and I appreciate that. And I agree with you, Brother Bilal. I had not known this information before, and I'm glad that Sajda was on board to inform us. And so I want to encourage you, Sajda, to continue to talk about it. I agree with Brother Bilal. It has to be talked about. It has not been put out there in the format to the people that has touched those of us who are already experienced in that area of the world and have done business in that area of the world. So I think with what I heard of your presentation, you can put it out there and hopefully get more people involved in this mission. So, inshallah, we'll see.
Inshallah.
I would love to. Every Sunday, there is a forum that is hosted by NMBC where we have speakers and representatives of the trip to present to the community. It's a free Zoom link, and I'll share it with you, Brother Bilal, every Sunday. And I host it, actually. I host this. And last week we had, as I said, the chief advisor to the ambassador of Sierra Leone, Brother Bashir Sheikh from Senegal, speak about specifically in detail the needs of businesses in Senegal and Sierra Leone. And the budget that is allotted from the government for these particular businesses. Before that, we had Dr. Wendy Muhammad, Sajda Wendy Muhammad, and we had Sister Melissa Muhammad, who I said is an international tax accountant, started her own broker business called Black and Global Business Network. We had them online talking about international business and how to get it done. Before that, we had attorney Dan Fodio, Brother Dan Fodio, online talking about international relations and taxation and how to do from a legal standpoint. So we're constantly every Sunday bringing these professionals to the table to speak to the community, to let them know that this is what's going to come to the conference. This is how we're presenting. And everything that we're doing is for the expansion of the Black community. And we're inviting, you know, Muslims and non-Muslims alike. We have non-Muslims to join in on Sunday as well. So, we're constantly building up more of a credible platform to present this information. And so my intention in coming online was to do just that. And alhamdulillah, I feel like I've done that from your response. And I'll be very, very happy to come back again and talk some more about this.
And this information you were talking about on Sundays or any other information where this discussion is being held, you see, if you would send that to me, well, you have it, nabassc@gmail.com. But if you would send me that information is going to the churches. Like I said, most of these states that are in communications with us, most of them, you're going to find most of our listeners, you know, they're Christians. And they listen to our message, but they're Christians, but they're African Americans. And but I'm saying we have a value that they want that they're interested in, and I want to make that value, especially with what you're doing. You see, we have those connections. Some of our Christian brothers and sisters, they don't have those connections, and I ain't going to say why, I'll be guessing. But we know that if you're controlled by someone else and you can't have access to communications and all like that, then you ain't going to be able to communicate. But as African Americans, especially as Muslims, we have connections all over the world. And those connections we can share with our Christian brothers and sisters. So this valuable information that you're bringing and sending me, it's going to be sent to them. That way, when we they get on these discussions, they can hear these discussions themselves, and when it's time to make a move, more or less, we all are ready to do it collectively. So I would invite you, like I said, in order to, we all got to work together, in other words. All of us got to bring our valuable information and our intellect to the table. And as long as we're doing that, this is what we're going to get from you. So, yeah, I welcome you to continue. Like I said, we're with you. We're with you on this one. So with that said, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you again.
Go right back to your mother.
Okay. Thank you so much. Assalamualaikum.
Well, good evening, everyone. And thank you for sharing your time with us as we talk about disaster preparedness. And I hope everyone can hear me well.
We can,
yes. Okay, very good. I would like to know whether or not our guest speaker is on. Hiram Mason, are you on? So if you, whenever he comes on, hopefully he will announce himself and we'll get started. And we want to talk to Hiram about the disasters that he and his family have experienced ever since 1992. So we're waiting until he comes on board. Okay. And once again, thank you, Sajda. We are certainly excited to hear more about what you have to say in the future about the in the very near future about the program. So
go right ahead, Suspension.
Okay. So in the past week, we have been watching what is taking place in the disaster preparedness world. And we know some basic things that have taken place, and that is a very, very broad discussion on the allocation of funding for various mitigation programs. Now, mitigation is what we are talking about every week. And we have, and the definition for mitigation is to lessen the impact of a disaster. That's what mitigation means. And we go over the vocabulary because this vocabulary is new to all of us. And it's essential that we start talking the vocabulary of climate change. And so the funding is beginning to cipher out and be made available on a state level to programs, to organizations, to nonprofits, even those groups that have developed private-public partnerships who have come up with and developed programs to lessen the impact of disaster, climate change disaster on their families and on their communities. And that's what we have been talking about. And our mitigation project is preparedness, training America in disaster preparedness. There are two phases of a storm. There's the pre-disaster phase, and then there's the disaster phase. In the disaster phase, we talk about recovery. In the pre-disaster stage, we talk about preparedness, and that is where we are concentrating our efforts, in the pre-disaster phase. And so yes, there are funds that are beginning to come down. What we want to do, and we need the help of the community, we want to train people who can become trainers themselves. And it begins with a basic introduction course that we started offering in July. We do not have a schedule for October. We intentionally chose not to have a schedule for October because we wanted to assess the training and the response this month. So we will put out another training schedule for November, for November and December, we should have that schedule out very shortly. But the important thing for the community is the organizations that you all are part of, our listening audience, the organizations that you are part of, bring them to the table to develop partnership with us. And when I say with us, I'm talking about many other organizations that have already come on board. We know that we're not going to be able to achieve anything unless we unify. And this is what we must do. There's strength in numbers. Teach the disaster preparedness course. We talk about other aspects other than what you find on the internet. And there's a lot of data. FEMA has done a great job putting out data, putting out information, putting out step-by-step guides. It's all over the internet, and it's good information. However, we recognize that the messaging is not getting to the grassroots people. And I think FEMA recognized that it is not getting to the grassroots people, because they themselves have said that since 2013, preparedness has increased by 2%. And that says that there is an issue there. There's a problem there. And we think and we know from our past experience that there has to be a different message coming into the community for the people. And this is what this program is all about. And, of course, we want organizations to participate. And there is a step-by-step process. Now, come on board, and we will show you, and we will train the people in your organization so your organization can have individuals who are going out into the community. Now, we know we need jobs in our community, but if some of you all can reflect back to the 70s and the 80s, when we had community organization structure and we had interns going out into the community throughout the United States, those people did receive a salary. And many of them are now the people who are heading up organizations, still heading up nonprofits. So we know that that business model, community engagement model, worked. It was very successful because it ushered in a tremendous civil rights movement. So it worked, and it can continue to work. But we have to have the right dialogue, the right messaging. And so I'm FEMA certified, and I know that FEMA put out good information. But we also know how to take their information and put it in a format and in the language that we can get people to listen to, and not only to listen to, but take action. And that is what we are not doing as a people and as a community, not just in the African-American community, but throughout America. When preparedness has only increased by 2%, it is throughout the United States. And so we're not just being isolated in one area. We want to go all over the United States. We have that capability because we've done it before, and we know that we as a people, we can train people all over this country to be prepared. And if we're not out there doing it, there aren't many resources out there. There are plenty funds available for it, but people have not taken the initiative to do it. So we want the community to work with us. Bring your organizations to this platform, this Blog Talk Radio. Contact the brothers at this radio, at this Blog Talk Radio, and let them know that you want to bring your organization forward to become involved with us. And this is what we need. We need the numbers. We need the people. And we need the people to ask us questions. So if we have a good radio audience tonight, ask us questions. And when Hiram Mason comes on board, and hopefully he'll be able to get in, we want him to tell us how he and his family survived two major hurricanes, Hurricane Andrew and Hurricane Katrina. So are there any comments? And Hiram, if you're there, please announce yourself. So I don't think he's there yet. So is there any comments from the audience?
Yes,
yes, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, this Brother Aziz, I wanted to say, Sister Aisha, some of the very things that you've talked about this disaster preparation, ever since Ian, this Hurricane Ian hit the country, every day since then, more and more property losses have occurred, and it's now thousands of people that are homeless that it wasn't prepared, nor were the areas that they lived in prepared. And I'm saying it's so important to our listeners to really be aware of what you're saying, because if these people had some type of preparation, the disasters wouldn't have been so great, because there was no preparation for what happened if this did happen. And this is what, Sister Aisha, you've been telling our audience about, our listeners about, since you've been offering this preparation course. So I wanted to say that your comments on that, the destruction of Ian and what you've seen taking place about the need for disaster preparation based on the disaster that we just saw.
Yes. Well, you know, Ian, prior to Ian, the two most expensive hurricanes in the U.S. were Andrew and Katrina. Now, okay, Ian has topped both of those in expense. And we still have not seen the complete fallout from Ian. And it's affecting not just the people in the areas where it struck, but it's also going to affect us, because we still have the emotional and the mental stress that's going to play out. And, you know, that takes some time for us to see that. So in addition, the property damage we see immediately, but we don't see the other underlying effects and that these storms are having on our children. And I think last week I mentioned that the anxiety level of our children have increased tremendously. And also in adults, 1 in 5 adults have anxiety disorders in the United States, and a lot, and that's increasing. So that's 20% of the people in the U.S. have, adults have anxiety disorder. And these same anxiety disorders that the parents have, many of the children are experiencing the same thing, but the young people don't know how to articulate it, so they act it out. The public school is inundated by young people who are expressing personality traits that's not conducive for learning. But they need an outlet. And they are bringing in professional people to work with the young children. But we have got to be conscious of it. But one thing has been proven. When a family sits down and have a plan and talk about a disaster, but more importantly, have a plan for what that family is going to do when a disaster strikes, it empowers the family. That language, just sitting down discussing preparedness and what to do in the event of, it empowers the family. The young people, their understanding increases. Family members develop more courage. And we're finding now that people do not have courage to deal with the storm, so they rather not think about it. But many years ago, we used to always use this terminology called willpower. We don't hear that much anymore, but we have to unite our will, bring our will together, and that's called willpower. And that will escalate the families to sit down, make the plan. Everybody in the family will have an idea of what to do. So it encourages you. You get the fear leaves you. And young people are empowered, and they feel protected. But if the families do not talk about this, do not have a plan, a step-by-step instructional plan of what to do and how to do it, and have the supplies on hand that they need in the event they have to evacuate or if someone has to shelter in place. These are the things that we have got to find to be as common in our household as we have bread and peanut butter. It's a new way that we're going to have to live. It's called adaptation. And it takes many societies a long time to adapt. But the sooner we start adapting to this new way of life, the sooner we'll be able to mitigate the impact of these storms that we know are coming our way. And from the faith-based community, they will tell you, every scripture tells you that it's coming our way. We know this when we see it. And when it comes, many people act so surprised. And they don't know what to do. They don't know how to respond. But we've got to stop this if we are going to survive. We must adapt. We must be prepared. We have to have courage, and we have to have willpower. If you do not have courage, you don't have willpower, you're not going to sit down and make a plan, and that has been shown. So we've got to change this scenario and look at your little children, your grandchildren and your children and the neighbors and the kids all over the community. The sadness and the fear is very apparent in their faces. And the teachers are seeing it in the schools. So I say to the parents and the grandparents, we have to do something about it. And we know how to be courageous. They do not. We know how to have willpower. They do not. We know how to sit down and have a plan and make a plan, because in the training, we send you the template. and we go over the plan. But after the training session, you're going to still have to sit down with your family and finish that plan. And it doesn't take a lot of time. And believe me, you will feel more empowered. You will have more courage. And you will be more willing to then deal with this issue. So this is where we want to go. But we cannot do it unless people step up to the table and be accountable and be responsible for their own survival. But we're going to keep asking folks to step up. Come to the training. Get involved. Bring your sororities, your faith-based organizations, your community organizations. Bring everybody to the table. Get your entire organization, every member trained, and work together to build community strength. And this is when whenever there's a storm, that's when you need your neighbors. That's when you need people that you're communicating with, because somebody is going to have your back and you're going to have somebody else's back. So this rut that we have, this isolationism that we as a community have gotten into over the decades of not liking our neighbors, not even communicating with our neighbors, we've got to go back to something that's sensible. When a storm comes, you need your neighbor. You need somebody that if your car does not start, that will give you and some of your family members a ride out of that area where the disaster is coming to. So these are changes we're going to have to make in our life, and we're going to have to adapt. If we don't adapt, if we don't prepare, if we don't have a plan, our chances of survival is highly decreased. So these are the things that we must do. So any of our audience members who have a question, please let us hear from you. But more importantly, go back to your organizations and bring your organizations to the table and tell the brothers that, yes, you can be in touch with our organization. We want to get everybody in our organization trained, and we want to work as a unit, as a strong community effort in the D.C. area, in the North Carolina area, the Virginia area, all over the United States. So this is a virtual world now. So we can work all over the United States, and you want to be a part of this. So do we any response?
So, Slaisha, Brother Bilal, and I'm looking at our audience this evening. We have a very low audience.
Okay.
And we're more or less so low that we could be preaching. You got the choir, you got the preacher preaching to the choir. And so what we're going to do is that, and those of anyone, because we do, you know, there are those who are on the website that are listening to us that we can't hear from, but they can hear us. But nevertheless, we are looking at as far as our board, board, and it's telling us that we have a low audience. So with that said, is that the reasons we normally have low audience is because of our announcements. Who did we tell about our program and our upcoming programs? Because like I was saying to your daughter, value is something that we have to present, because if we don't present it, no one is going to realize value, and especially our values. So again, I will, and I know we got our programs out late. So again, we will. We're gonna do everything we can to let our upcoming programs. And you may want to continue your programs next week, and we will announce those programs as everywhere we go up until next week. And this is something that we all have to do, and I will, I know many of our directors are not even on with us tonight. So it's a matter of now all, especially the directors, making sure that we, and myself, I try to inform at least 10 different potential listeners, whether they're business folks or whether they have a political idea. I try to get at least 10 of them on every week. And I think if we all put forth that same effort of trying to get at least 10 of presenters or listeners or what have you on, then we will find that we will be able to get our values out to everyone, and we'll, and our attendance would be much larger.
That's a great idea.
We will say, though, those that are listening, our mics are still open. If you have any comments, or anyone who have any comments that are listening, now's a good time. We welcome your comments. So, listeners, if you have something that you like to share with us at this moment, we welcome your comments. Okay, and so Sister Aisha and Brother Aziz, not unless you two have something else that you would like to share, but like I said, we're more or less sharing it with the low audience. We will just go ahead and, like I said, we have our work cut out for next week.
I don't have anything else to say about the topic, but I think that what you just about getting the word out more.
You're absolutely
right. And the organizations that I will make a tremendous effort to get the announcement out to the organizations that I know that I'm affiliated with.
Remember, brothers and sisters, everyone wants to be heard, especially African Americans. They don't have any channels as to where their voice can really be heard. Certainly, if they know that this is a place where their voice and their business, it's business that their political voice can be heard, I would think they would be rushing to get that done. So it's a matter of sometimes we just have to do what we have to do. And like I said, every week, and I'll speak to all of the directors. Matter of fact, we need to have a directors meeting, but at least try to bring at least 10 presenters. Invite 10 presenters. On a weekly basis, and that way we will see where our studio will be quite filled. So unless you two have any other comments or comments that you would like to make, we're just going to go ahead and just discontinue, and we look forward to next week's show.
Sounds great.
Okay.
Sounds good.